Well, it's always great to welcome on new faces, new voices at HeartlandCollegeSports.com. I'm Pete Mundo. Great to have you here as always. And it is a thrill to welcome on a play-by-play voice from around the Big 12. Mark Daniels joining us here on the show. Nearly 30 years with the Knights. So he has seen this program really from the start to where it now is in the Big 12. And Mark, let's just start off with this. Almost one full year into your time being a member of the Big 12. What have these last 9-10 months been like for you making this transition?
Well, for me, it's been outstanding. I mean, I've been blessed in my near 30 years to travel to a lot of places, a lot of campuses across the country, the many conferences UCF has been in. But in the Big 12, some new towns that we've ventured to, some towns I've been in before. The one thing I really enjoy about the Big 12, and even with the four new schools coming in, with everything that's happened in college sports, there's a lot of places that have conferences where half the league's trying to get out and just disorganized. And I think the 12 and soon 16 schools realize this is where their home is. I think we've also ventured a college towns that wrap their arms around their programs, love their team, are realistic with expectations, are passionate about them. And I think it's an outstanding league. And I think in the majority of sports, it's a wide open league where there isn't one or two schools that dominate as we move forward now. And I think that's exciting for fans. So hopefully UCF has been a great addition for the Big 12 and those fan bases as a new town to come to in Orlando. We think we've got a lot to offer. And it's been awesome. Football, basketball, now into baseball. You know, it's been great for me. I think it's been great for UCF fans as well.
Well, take me through, you know, your 30-year ascension as the play-by-play voice and what you've seen. I mean, the way the university has grown, the way the region has grown has been tremendous. My folks spent a decade down in Winter Springs about 5-10 years ago now, and the place has just absolutely exploded. What has that been like seeing it from the ground floor and just how the university has grown as well?
Yeah, people outside of Orlando think that we're just theme parks and fast food restaurants, and there's a portion of Orlando that's true. Mm-hmm. But we don't go to Disney World every day, and Orlando is and soon to be a top 15 TV market. And wow. On any given day, Orlando, if you count the tourists that are here, we're larger than the city of Atlanta. Orlando metropolitan area kind of spreads out where people live north, south, east, west of the city. UCF located on the east side of town. And when you take the whole metropolitan area, you're over 2 million people. So it's a large town. As far as UCF's growth, when I came to Orlando in 89, I think UCF had just over 16,000 students. I started broadcasting games in 95. My first game was Dante Culpepper's first game in 1995. And I think then we had about 21, 22,000 students. And as UCF finishes up a spring semester, we're just below 70,000 students.
Wow.
Almost one of the largest universities in the country. And there are some Big 12 schools that have been around for a century longer than UCF, but their total alumni is maybe 250,000 to 300,000. At UCF, in the next decade, they will graduate that many students. So when people talk about the growth of UCF in the next 20, 30, 50 years, it'll have one of, if not the largest alumni base in the country because the number of students that they turn out on a yearly basis. So, you know, the beauty of the Big 12 is there's some wonderful college towns of Manhattan, Kansas, and Lubbock and Waco that are very proud towns that have been fans of their schools for decades and decades and decades and decades. And here's UCF, this big mammoth school that's brand new to the conference that is growing its fan base that will have generational income in years to come. So as we play catch up, in a lot of areas, UCF is bringing this big, large monster into the conference as well.
How has the Orlando media market adjusted to UCF being in the Big 12 when you do have pro sports there? But as UCF, have you noticed gotten more attention from local media with this move?
So timing's everything. And if you go back and if we go back, say, 15 years ago,
yeah.
15 years ago, this is a dominant Florida Gator town. And here's UCF over here playing in that league. And that league back then was Conference USA. So it didn't get headlines. You know, the Magic 15 years ago were beginning to actually 15 years ago, we're in the NBA Finals in 2009. So they're at the peak. So UCF fights for headlines. Then the 2013 season comes along where UCF plays in its first Fiesta Bowl. And all of a sudden, the attention begins to change. Then the program bottoms out in 2016, but then 2017 and 18 happens. The undefeated season with a Peach Bowl victory, the undefeated regular season in 18. And as that begins to happen, all of a sudden the Magic are in a massive rebuild. Florida is beginning to no longer be the dominant program that it was. Florida State is beginning to kind of move away from the Jimbo Fisher national championship years to, you know, them kind of falling back. So the timing allowed UCF to come in and grab attention with headlines. And then the whole stuff about conference realignment, what might happen. And then all of a sudden the Big 12 opportunity comes along a few years ago and the landscape has changed in media coverage. And now, you know, certainly UCF gets its share of headlines. I think, you know, the Orlando media, I think, has done an outstanding job in covering UCF. But it's about timing and if you're winning. You know, the Florida Gators are still trying to reestablish themselves. And nobody would argue they're the dominant program in the state because of its history. But UCF has had more double-digit win seasons than they have in recent years. Florida State's got it rolling again now. So timing plays a big factor in that. But then moving into the Big 12, I think, certainly helped UCF to keep that momentum of media coverage going.
So what is that hierarchy? You beautifully laid out the last 15 years of basically Florida sports and how UCF fits into the equation here. But I'm also looking at a great opportunity. Miami is maybe going to figure it out with Mario Cristobal. I don't know. You mentioned Florida State's in a good spot. Florida's still trying to figure out where it's at. So it feels like this thing is primed for UCF in that state, recruiting-wise, media attention. What do you think the opportunities are there?
Well, again, it's just about can you win? You know, again, the comparison to if you're in Manhattan or Lubbock, they're only going to talk about Kansas State and Texas Tech. They're not competing with the number of teams you just talked about. And it's not that Texas doesn't get coverage in Lubbock, but, you know, it's about winning. And if UCF can win, if the second season of the Big 12 leads to a team that can compete for a conference title for most of the season, it'll certainly bring the coverage. The Magic are beginning to ascend again. So winning has a lot to do with it. But I think where the program's at right now, it's in a good spot. The fan base is totally engaged in the Big 12. And again, I think it's an exciting league, particularly in football, where the reality is there are going to be some really good teams that bring a lot of people back. But there's no one dominant or two dominant teams in the Big 12. So there's a bunch of teams that should have expectations going into 24 that, hey, if we win this, we win that, and a couple pieces fall in place, we can be in the hunt. And we're going to learn what 16 teams are like. We're going to learn that in the SEC. We're going to learn about 18 in the Big Ten, where it's hard to envision people dominating a league because of the competition on a week-in and week-out basis and the way the geographic setup, the traveling. No school traveled more than UCF did last year. We traveled more miles than anybody else outside of Hawaii. And I think it impacted the team. It's not the only excuse why they lost some games, but I think the travel caught up them. We flew out to Boise. You know, we played at Kansas State, came back a couple weeks later, played at Kansas. We flew out to Lubbock, Texas, and I think that did add up. But that ain't going to change, you know, in the Big 12 this year. In fact, we play all four new schools. So it'll be interesting, and I think really exciting for fans.
So take me through last year. I mean, you know, we talked a lot about it here on the site and on the show. That, I mean, I don't know, you look at it, UCF goes 6-6, but they're a couple of plays away from 9-3. You know, the Baylor game, the OU game, the Tech game. Of those three, does one sting more than the other that really maybe changed the trajectory for how the rest of the season could have gone?
Well, the Baylor game. I mean, it's a football game. You can't lose with the lead that UCF had. So that's the one that is the outlier that you hope happens once every 20 years. You know, think about last season. And I think it took fans, it took media, and I think to a degree, even Gus Malzahn's staff, you can anticipate for the jump in competition from where the American was. The American was a great league for UCF, you know, for the decade they were there. And you could try to prepare you want for the jump into a Power Five league, but until you begin to experience it and see it firsthand and realize the areas that you've got to get better at, you know, I think that's why if you look at the history of schools that made that jump, you know, even when Utah made the jump to the Pac-12, they went through that physical adjustment and others. So I think UCF had to experience that. And I think they found the quality of lines on both offense and defensive side, how big safeties were, how they played the run, just how physical the league was. And you know better than me, the Big 12 from the outside, people thought, hey, it's basically 7-on-7 football. Well, until you go and experience it, the last couple of years became a much more physical league. And I think UCF saw that. And a lot of close football games, which UCF played, came down to a couple of possessions where maybe you were not as fast. You were not as physical in certain situations. And UCF played a ton of one-possession games. A couple of those games ended up two scores. UCF plays at Kansas State. They've got the ball in the K-State side of the field in a one-possession game. Quarterback rolls out, and instead of throwing the ball away, he steps out of bounds. Now you're in second and 17, changes the dynamics of the game. We talked about the Baylor game. The West Virginia game is a one-possession game. Late third quarter, UCF's got the ball. Blindside hit, quarterback sack, fumble. West Virginia scores. Texas Tech, a blocked extra point, is a one-point game there. So, but that's football. And you could say, well, should they won all those games? I don't know, but they certainly could have won a couple. But you got to get deeper on the line. You've got to get better at defensive ends. You got to have an offensive line that can run block. You got to have safeties in order to play the run. And I think UCF learned that last year. What may have been good enough to compete in the American was not good enough to win those close games in the Big 12. And why I think Gus's staff learned through the year, went heavy in the portal again from a recruiting standpoint of high school players, identified players that they believe can play now. And again, through the portal, being real smart in where do I plug in. One of UCF's biggest areas of need was linebacker. Well, they went heavy into the linebacking core, took guys that had been three-year starters in the SEC, in the Big 12, and all of a sudden you look and go, oh, wow, they're much better at linebacker now. Safeties, we got to get bigger. You know, you look around the Big 12, safeties are 6'2", 220. We played some games with guys 5'10", 170. And I think they got better and bigger in those areas. So they're more prepared, but now you've got to go play. And for UCF, it's a challenging and exciting schedule this year.
Yeah, it is. No doubt about it. He's Mark Daniels, the play-by-play voice of the UCF Knights. I'm Pete Mundo. Make sure you're hitting that subscribe button if you're new to the show on the podcast or on YouTube as well. So, Mark, you mentioned a lot of the changes that came this offseason. They utilized the portal effectively. Last I checked, they have a top 20, maybe 25 class in the transfer portal. Is this going to be a program that utilizes the recruiting with the portal? Will it lean more portal? How do you see that shaking out in this new world order of college football we find ourselves in?
Pete, does anybody know the answer to that question? I don't, you know, I mean, I think we're learning how programs are going to evolve and handle the portal in this world that continues to change. I will say this for Gus Malzahn. You know, the last couple of years, Gus has been heavy portal, but he's also, if you take a look, he's recruiting top 30 classes. He brought one in this past year. Right now for 25, he's got a top 20 class for next year. Portal-wise, he's been a top 25, 30 guy as well. So I think it's fair to say both for Cincinnati and Houston and UCF and BYU, they're still building up to get to a Power 4 Big 12 roster. I mean, it doesn't happen because you're now in the league. So I think that adjustment is still happening. Maybe Gus, after this year and another year, feels like, okay, now I've got the roster that I think I need. Now I can plug in some areas. But I think right now they're trying to add talent and talent to certain positions to get to that level that they think they need to. But my guess is because of the location that UCF is in, they're probably going to be a place that, and I don't want to speak for Gus, maybe they're 60 portal, 40 high school. Maybe you want to be 50-50, but even if you're, you know, your high school class, who knows in 2 years who's still there? So the key is, are you going to recruit and get guys that you're going to develop and stay? I think every program in the country is learning how to deal with that. But, you know, I think Gus feels good about where his team's at this year compared to where they were 1 year ago at the end of spring practice.
I know this program is excited for year two in the Big 12, but just for the Big 12 fan who doesn't really know, not know anything, but just the value of playing UF in October. How big is that for this program, for this fan base, and what will it mean when we get to October 5th and that game coming up in Gainesville?
Well, there's two answers to it. I think a UCF fan feels like the days of UCF looking at big non-conference games with an, oh, wow, we get to play them, is long gone. UCF has moved past that. They've won enough of those games that it's no longer that big of a deal. But because it's Florida and because of some of the outside noise of how the game was scheduled, the previous AD, Danny White, who was great for UCF when he was there, had a position that we don't do two for ones. We're going to do one for one. Terry Mahajer, the current AD, has done a great job at UCF. Had a different philosophy when he got here, but then the Big 12 happened, and now I think he has a different philosophy about non-conference games as well. So Florida will tell you it's a two-for-one. UCF will say, no, it's a one-off, and then we're going to play a home-and-home you know, down the line. Whatever it is, I think it's an exciting game for UCF fans. Look, they played a few years ago over in Tampa in the Gasparilla Bowl. It was when Florida was in a transition of a coaching change. UCF won the game comfortably. You know, for Gus, that was a big football game. For UCF, it was a big football game. Is it a big game? Of course it's a big game because it's in the state. It's an opportunity that UCF believes they're going to go and compete against a Florida team that if you win, I mean, it gives you bragging rights. For Florida, they may have a different view about the importance of the game. But I know UCF fans believe that, you know, what once was this gap between the two programs has changed. A Florida fan will probably tell you, hey, we still look down at UCF regardless of what happens in this football game. And that's why we have a fan bases that bicker back and forth. So it's definitely a big football game for UCF because of who it is. It's a great opportunity. It won't make or break UCF season, and it may not make or break Florida season. For both, it's a big non-conference game in a schedule. The Gators have a brutal schedule this year, and UCF's Big 12 schedule is pretty hard as well. So big game, no question. It's part of a huge 2 weeks for UCF. Dion in Colorado is the week before, and then Gainesville after that. So it'll be a crazy 2 weeks for UCF.
Yeah, it's going to be a great early stretch of the season there. I want to spend a couple of minutes on basketball. Yeah. I mean, you look at – listen, I think this team had a great year. You talk about some of the close games in football. There were plenty of those in basketball. There were some great wins as well. You think about Kansas early in the season. I think this team overachieved. They were in the talk for the NCAA tournament late in the year if they had a good little run there. So what are we looking at with UCF hoops and what – Coach Dawkins can do there with this program in this spot over the next few years?
You know, I think the jump of the American, where UCF in the last few years was more middle of the pack into the best basketball league in the country. And UCF was picked dead last before the season. And you know what? That probably was the right projection. Then I think you saw a team to a degree in football, but more in basketball. And I think we're watching it now in baseball a little bit. That might be playing above its talent level. And what I mean by that is you get motivated by who you're playing and kind of raise your game. And I thought in basketball, UCF did that with a roster that maybe shouldn't have been near the middle of the pack in the Big 12. So then you had guys that kind of elevated the game and played well. They won some big games, beating Kansas, beating Texas Tech, beating Oklahoma, winning at Texas. And lost a bunch of close games. And again, the difference of the roster now to where you hope it's going to be. But it also led to this for UCF. Last year in the American, we played in front of 55% capacity on our home court. This year, we played in front of 98% capacity.
Wow.
And when you put almost 10,000 people in a building that holds 9,900, it makes it a loud, great environment. Visiting coaches talked about that. And I think UCF's reputation was, hey, if they get it going, that's a really tough place to play. But now the challenge is, how do you back that up? And in a portal world in basketball where there's so much movement, now can Johnny Dawkins do it again by bringing in a class heavy with portal players? But now you can sell, hey, this is the Big 12. This is who you're playing against. This is what we did last year. Here's how you can get to the NCAA tournament and help us. And I think they've gone thus far through the portal and gotten a better caliber player than they had last year. Johnny's got a great high school class coming in. He's got a great class committed for next year as well. So now can you make that next step? Easier said than done in a basketball league that might be deeper, obviously, with the new additions than we just had this past year. But football, UCF has sold out for years. But in basketball, now you've created an enthused fan base that wants to go to basketball games, that wants to be there. It became a place to be seen in Orlando where it wasn't just cool to go to Magic games this year. It was cool to go to UCF games. And who was sitting courtside there? You want to keep that momentum going as they head into year two.
That's awesome. What's the NIL situation like? Is the university, the athletic department comfortable with the NIL and their ability to compete in that world that we're living in right now?
Well, the answer is probably every school will tell you no, except a handful. So look, there are some known things about UCF, and a reminder, UCF and Cincinnati, Houston, BYU, half share this That's year, right. half share next year. So you've got the four schools coming in that get full share, but also keep this in mind. Half of UCF's half share goes to the American for the buyout. So financially, UCF is still another year away of benefiting of that media money. Then the new college football playoff money will come in. So they'll get caught up. But right now, there's a lot of moving parts just within the dollars in the athletic department. From an NIL standpoint, look, UCF's in a good spot. They know they've got to get better. And that's why, if you go back to where we started this conversation, UCF's alumni base is going to grow quickly. But right now, it is one of the youngest alumni bases in the country with the average age less than 35, competing against programs that have generational donors that have been around for decades. So as that group grows and gets into their second and third tier of making money, you hope that translates into more dollars for your program. But UCF's in a good spot now. They're working to get better. And the interesting thing is some of their biggest NIL supporters are not graduates of UCF that are coming aboard because they like what they've seen. They've come to a game and experienced the bounce house, which is unique because of all the different things we've got going on there. Came to basketball games. They got a chance to experience that. So that's a really great sign that some of their biggest NIL supporters don't have a degree from UCF, but they want to get involved, and they hope that's going to grow over the years.
That's huge. I know I'll end it here, Mark Daniels, voice of the Knights. I know you haven't been everywhere yet, but is there one road trip that sticks out to you, a favorite Big 12 road trip that you've been on thus far through whether it's football, basketball, or baseball?
I will tell you this. In football, I had been to Manhattan before. UCF played at Kansas State before they were Big 12 members. That was our first game, and it was awesome. Fantastic environment. I think that fan base is incredible for many reasons. One, they're loyal and passionate. They're realistic. For example, they ended their season winning a bowl game in Orlando. They were ecstatic. They didn't win the national championship, but they loved their team. Like, how do you not love a realistic fan base that loves everything about their program? So that was awesome to go to. Look, we went to Oklahoma, had a chance to win that football game. They're moving on, obviously, to the SEC. It was a great environment there. I loved going to Texas Tech, even though the construction is going on in the end zone. Same thing, a great fan base in that town that loves their team, that wraps their arms around it. You know, in basketball, heck, every environment was fantastic. I'll tell you what, I didn't realize it, but it's a bucket list. If you've never been to a basketball game at BYU, wow. And obviously a new member like us, but 17 plus thousand fans that are loud, that are right on top of the court, an incredible student section. That was outstanding. And in baseball, people may not think about this. Go to Morgantown for a Big 12 series. We played up there in front of packed houses on a Saturday and Sunday. Friday was 35 degrees, wind and rain. But Saturday, Sunday, overflowing crowd, more than 4,000 people. It was an awesome baseball environment. You may not think that about West Virginia, but it was great. And so I've been to many this year, some places I haven't been to, looking forward to it. So as I said, I think it's an awesome league, a great combination of talents and passionate fan bases. And I know UCF is excited and proud to be part of the Big 12.
Well, I know Big 12 fans have already had a blast getting down there, getting that sunny Florida experience there, especially as you get late in the football
season. Come to the bounce house. I mean, yeah. We view ourselves as a four-day weekend. The people come down on Thursday, enjoy our theme parks, beaches, restaurant, everything on Friday, football game Saturday. So for those that have never been to the bounce house, I think you'll find it one of the more unique stadiums. We don't have the history of the big house in Michigan and some of these other places, but I think it's one of the coolest venues you'll come to watch a football game because of all the other things that happen on a game day at our place.
That's all. I mean, our one of our football writers, Derek Duke, was down there that Baylor game, I hate to say. He was there, and he loved it. So Mark Daniels, voice of the Knights, great work, Mark. Thank you for being here. Looking forward to keeping in touch, and welcome to the Big 12 almost a year later.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it.
You bet. He's Mark Daniels. I'm Pete Mundo. Subscribe to the channel and the show, and we'll talk to you soon. Go Big 12.